The Healer, The Healing Work of Mary Baker Eddy, compiled and arranged by David Keeston. Part 4, Sixth Continuation. Number 127. Mrs. Eddy always had a friendly attitude towards the clergy, and would frequently have ministers in her classes. One instance was recited by Irving C. Tomlinson in the first edition of his biography, 12 Years with Mary Baker Eddy. While I was stopping in Washington, D.C. with my husband, Asa G. Eddy, we attended the church formerly frequented by President Garfield. The clergyman was introduced to us and begged the privilege of paying us a call. He early took the opportunity of visiting us and spent the afternoon in listening to our explanation of the Bible and Christian Science. He asked the privilege of remaining to the 6 o'clock dinner, explaining that he enjoyed the sociability of the occasion, though he could not partake of the repast, saying that for years he had been troubled with a stomach difficulty which the physicians declared had developed into cancer of the stomach. He avoided all hearty food and confined himself exclusively to a fluid diet. All this he told us just as we were preparing to go to the dining room. I said to him briefly that this was an excellent opportunity to put to a test our talk of the afternoon. He replied by saying that he hardly could consent to test the doctrine for the sake of killing himself. However, I voiced the truth and asserted his ability to eat in comfort. He went with us to the table, soon forgot himself and his false fears, and partook heartily of the salad, meat, and pastry. At the conclusion of the dinner, he said, "What have I done? Will I ever survive?" We assured him there was no danger. He felt no harm and never was troubled again. From Mark. "And these signs shall follow them that believe. In my name shall they cast out devils. They shall speak with new tongues. They shall take up serpents. And if they drink any deadly thing, it shall not hurt them." From Science and Health. "In our age, Christianity is again demonstrating the power of divine principle, as it did over 1900 years ago, by healing the sick and triumphing over death. Jesus never taught that drugs, food, air, and exercise could make a man healthy, or that they could destroy human life. Nor did he illustrate these errors by his practice." Number 128. Mrs. Eddy relates in Miscellaneous Writings, page 112, line 12, a curious incident regarding a criminal's realization of the significance of his crime and his subsequent healing. The mental stages of crime, which seem to belong to the latter days, are strictly classified in metaphysics as some of the many features and forms of what is properly denominated, in extreme cases, moral idiocy. I visited in his cell the assassin, Charles J. Gutio, of President Garfield, and found him in the mental state called moral idiocy. He had no sense of his crime, but regarded his act as one of simple justice and himself as the victim. My few words touched him. He sank back in his chair, limp and pale. His flippancy had fled. The jailer thanked me and said, "Other visitors have brought to him bouquets, but you have brought what will do him good." Number 129. One time when Gilbert Eddy had passed on, he met Mrs. Eddy's mother, who had passed on years previous, even though he had never known her, after which he was raised from death by Mrs. Eddy. They met because, as Mrs. Eddy said, they both loved me. Then she wrote the poem, Meeting of My Departed Mother and Husband. See appendix for text of poem. Number 130. During his last illness in 1882, our leader raised her husband, Dr. Asa G. Eddy, from the dead two or three times. After our talk with Miss Bartlett, she wrote to me as follows. The day Dr. Eddy seemingly left us, he seemed so much better that I went out with him on a little car ride, which he enjoyed. Mrs. Eddy had her work for the cause to attend to, and as both she and I had been up with him so many nights, two students insisted on our getting some rest and came to take care of Dr. Eddy for that night. Thereupon we retired, as he was so comfortable. He sat in his chair because more restful to him than the bed, and seemed very peaceful and comfortable, until finally he had been quiet so long that they went up to him to see if he was asleep, and found he was gone. But they did not know when it happened, as there was no sign or anything unusual, and they supposed him sleeping. Number 131. Later on, Mrs. Eddy wrote the following in regard to her husband's death. Circumstances debarred me from taking hold of my husband's case. He declared himself perfectly capable of carrying himself through, and I was so entirely absorbed in business that I permitted him to try, and when I awakened to the danger, it was too late. I have cured worse cases before, but took hold of them in time. I don't think that Dr. Carpenter, well known for his public demonstrations of hypnotism, had anything to do with my husband's death. But I do believe that it was the rejected students who were turned away from our college, Massachusetts Metaphysical College, because of their unworthiness and immorality. Today I sent for one of the students, Ahrens, whom my husband had helped liberally and given money, not knowing how unworthy he was. I wished him to come that I might prove to him how, by metaphysics, I could show the cause of my husband's death. He was as pale as a ghost when he came to the door, and refused to enter, or to believe that I knew what caused his death. Within half an hour after he left, I felt the same attack that my husband felt, the same that caused his death. I instantly gave myself the same metaphysical treatment that I would use in the case of arsenical poison, and so I recovered, just the same as I could have caused my husband to recover had I taken the case in time. Number 132. Only a few days ago, I disposed of a tumor in 24 hours that the doctors had said must be removed by the knife. I changed the course of the mind to counteract the effect of the disease. This proves the myth of matter. Mesmerism will make an apple burn the hand so that the child will cry. From Science and Health. If sickness is real, it belongs to immortality. If true, it is a part of truth. Would you attempt with drugs or without to destroy a quality or condition of truth? But if sickness and sin are illusions, the awakening from this mortal dream or illusion will bring us into health, holiness, and immortality. This awakening is the forever coming of Christ, the advanced appearing of truth, which casts out error and heals the sick. This is the salvation which comes through God, the divine principle, love, as demonstrated by Jesus. Number 133. The following recollections are from the experiences of Janet T. Coleman, one of the early workers in the cause of Christian Science, who studied with Mrs. Eddy January 22, 1883. I never shall forget my first experience when my mother and myself called upon her. After talking with her for a while, I said, "I would like to study with you." And then the wondrous purity of the one before me came to my thought, and I added, "If I am good enough." Such a look as came into her face, and she answered that for my answer she would teach me. I never had been in such an atmosphere of thought in my life before. I felt my own shortcomings. It was unfolded to me a glimmer of the divine inspiration which encircled her. And this is what gave me the blessed privilege of becoming her student, which I have never regretted. I can truthfully say that the light that shone into my thought has never left me, and I never doubted our leader's inspiration or wisdom in guiding our cause. Such wisdom is not of this world. I remember the day when I was first brought in contact with one who had been healed by the reading of Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. She had been an invalid in bed for about 15 years, and a friend had gone to the college and bought Science and Health and read it to her, just a few pages. Think it was 15 pages. And she rose up and walked. Her eyes and other claims had been healed also. As I walked into Hawthorne Rooms this Sunday, I saw a beautiful young lady go towards our leader and embrace her. She walked as though she was on air. She was so happy, and she was telling of her healing by her friend reading to her from Science and Health. It was a happy time for us all. I knew that Science and Health could heal, but this is the first one that I had seen. Now I know it is the Christ in that book that heals all mankind. From John. As many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name, which were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word was made flesh, and dwelt among us. And we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. From Science and Health. Christian Science is dawning upon a material age. The great spiritual facts of being, like rays of light, shine in the darkness, though the darkness, comprehending them not, may deny their reality. The proof that the system stated in this book is Christianly scientific resides in the good this system accomplishes, for it cures on a divine demonstrable principle, which all may understand. The scriptures are very sacred. Our aim must be to have them understood spiritually. For only by this understanding can truth be gained. The true theory of the universe, including man, is not in material history, but in spiritual development. Inspired thought relinquishes a material, sensual, and mortal theory of the universe and adopts the spiritual and immortal. It is this spiritual perception of Scripture which lifts humanity out of disease and death and inspires faith. The Spirit and the Bride say, "Come." And whosoever will, let him take the water of life freely. Christian Science separates error from truth and breathes through the sacred pages the spiritual sense of life, substance, and intelligence. See also Revelation chapter 10. Number 134. Many of those healed by Mary Baker Eddy went on to accomplish great things for the cause of Christian Science, whether it was the opening of a branch church or helping with the establishment and growth of the periodicals of the Mother Church or the healing practice. One example appears in Pulpit and Press, by Mary Baker Eddy. The Baltimore, Maryland Church was dedicated in January 1895. Dr. Hammond was the pastor of the Baltimore Church. This was before the Bible and Science and Health were ordained the pastor of all churches of the Christian Science denomination. Dr. Hammond says, he was converted to Christian Science by being cured by Mrs. Eddy of a physical ailment some 12 years ago, after several doctors had pronounced his case incurable. Number 135. Mrs. Eddy said that a woman to whom she had been kind was stricken down with a disease, but that she did not know it until one day a man told her she was dead. "Dead?" she said. "Dead?" He said, "Well, she was dying when I was there, and I suppose she is dead by this time." The next day she was around the house at her work, well, and remained so. Said the family never knew what or who healed the woman. Number 136. Mrs. Eddy was always showing the importance of spiritual understanding versus blind faith. in the healing process. Healing is demonstration. Nothing else is. When I first heard them speak of demonstration, I asked, who? I thought someone had been healed. I lectured one time where the spiritualists tried to break up the meeting. They would jump up and contradict without being asked. A lady in the audience, with whom I boarded, and the audience was large, was taken with one of her attacks of gallstones, fell on the floor in excruciating pain. I said to the spiritualists present, now is your time to prove what your God will do for you. Heal this woman. They jumped about and did what they could, but she grew worse and worse. I stepped down from the platform, stood beside her a moment, and the pain left. She arose and sat in her chair and was healed. This went broadcast, and through the healing, this science was brought to notice. It is lost sight of and must be regained. From 1 Kings, Elijah came unto all the people and said, how long halt ye between two opinions? If the Lord be God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him. And the people answered him not a word. Then said Elijah unto the people, I, even I only, remain a prophet of the Lord. But Baal's prophets are 450 men. Let them, therefore, give us two bullocks, and let them choose one bullock for themselves, and cut it in pieces, and lay it on wood, and put no fire under. And I will dress the other bullock, and lay it on wood, and put no fire under. And call ye on the name of your gods, and I will call on the name of the Lord. And the God that answereth by fire, let him be God. And all the people answered and said, it is well spoken. And Elijah said unto the prophets of Baal, choose you one bullock for yourselves, and dress it first, for ye are many, and call on the name of your gods, but put no fire under. And they took the bullock which was given them, and they dressed it, and called on the name of Baal from morning even until noon, saying, O Baal, hear us. But there was no voice, nor any that answered. And they leaped upon the altar which was made. And it came to pass at noon that Elijah mocked them and said, cry aloud, for he is a god. Either he is talking, or he is pursuing, or he is in a journey, or peradventure he sleepeth and must be awaked. And they cried aloud and cut themselves after their manner with knives and lancets till the blood gushed out upon them. And it came to pass when midday was past, and they prophesied until the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice, that there was neither voice, nor any to answer, nor any that regarded. And Elijah said unto all the people, come near unto me. And all the people came near unto him. And he repaired the altar of the Lord that was broken down. And Elijah took 12 stones, according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob, unto whom the word of the Lord came, saying, Israel shall be thy name. And with the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord, and he made a trench about the altar, as great as would contain 2 measures of seed. and he put the wood in order, and cut the bullock in pieces, and laid him on the wood, and said, Fill 4 barrels with water, and pour it on the burnt sacrifice, and on the wood. And he said, Do it the second time. And they did it the second time. And he said, Do it the third time. And they did it the third time. And the water ran round about the altar, and he filled the trench also with water. And it came to pass at the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice that Elijah the prophet came near and said, Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and of Israel, let it be known this day that thou art God in Israel, and that I am thy servant, and that I have done all these things at thy word. Hear me, O Lord, hear me, that this people may know that thou art the Lord God, and that thou hast turned their heart back again. Then the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt sacrifice and the wood and the stones and the dust and licked up the water that was in the trench. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and they said, The Lord, He is the God. The Lord, He is the God. Number 137. Calvin Fry recorded this interesting demonstration by Mrs. Eddy that took place June 8, 1884. I was sad and sobbing at the thought of how imperfectly I was demonstrating this science in my own life, and struggling to find my way, when there came a voice saying, You don't need to struggle, but simply to waken and see you are there. And immediately I could see those who had passed on in belief, and they were not dead, but were right here about us. But I had not gained their point so as to be conscious to them, but as it were looked ahead to it. Neither did I seem to be in an abnormal state of mind at the time I saw this, and yet it seemed as real and tangible as anything ever was. Number 138. During one of the periods from 1880 to 1885, when Mrs. Eddy preached in Hawthorne Hall, 2 Park Street, Boston, she healed Henry A. Littlefield of inflammatory rheumatism. He had been, and was afterward, a printer employed on Boston newspapers. In his 86th year, he related his healing as follows. I was born in 1846. I was attacked by inflammatory rheumatism in my early 30s in such a form that even the bedclothing was burdensome and painful. I had heard about Mrs. Eddy's meetings in Hawthorne Hall, and at the worst stage of the belief, I was taken there on a stretcher. After the service, Mrs. Eddy came down from the platform and greeted personally the small group of about a dozen people who were there. When she came to me and shook my hand and spoke to me, I felt the healing and responded by telling her that I was healed. I walked out of the hall rejoicing, and that belief never made itself real to me again. From Mark. When Jesus perceived in his spirit that they so reasoned within themselves, he said unto them, the scribes, Why reason ye these things in your hearts? Whether is it easier to say to the sick of the palsy, Thy sins be forgiven thee? Or to say, Arise and take up thy bed and walk? But that ye may know that the Son of Man hath power on earth to forgive sins. He saith to the sick of the palsy, I say unto thee, Arise and take up thy bed, and go thy way into thine house. And immediately he arose, took up the bed, and went forth before them all, insomuch that they were all amazed, and glorified God, saying, We never saw it on this fashion. Number 139. In many cases, pupils in Mrs. Eddy's classes were healed by her teaching. A typical instance was furnished by Eugene H. Green, then of Portland, Maine, but afterward of Providence, Rhode Island, who was in her class of November 1884. His widow, who was in the same class, has related his healing by Mrs. Eddy as follows. During this class, Mr. Green was healed of a hernia he had for many years. Mrs. Eddy had previously healed him of tuberculosis. One of Mrs. Eddy's students was treating a Civil War refugee, and the problem was not being met. The student went to Mrs. Eddy to ask what it was that was obstructing the manifestation of healing. Mrs. Eddy said, You have to know there never was a war. The problem was thereafter quickly met. Number 140. In November 1884, when Mrs. Eddy lived in Boston, a lady called on her and said, I am blind. I have come only to say this, for I am told you take no patients because you have so much else to do. In her reply, Mrs. Eddy spoke of goodness and health as more natural than badness and disease. She also spoke of one's duty to praise God and of one's need to leave evidences material for evidences spiritual. The lady said, I can see a little better, and went her way. Within a week, she sent a message to Mrs. Eddy saying that her sight was perfectly restored. From Matthew. And behold, two blind men sitting by the wayside, when they heard that Jesus passed by, cried out, saying, Have mercy on us, O Lord, thou Son of David. And the multitude rebuked them, because they should hold their peace. But they cried the more, saying, Have mercy on us, O Lord, thou Son of David. And Jesus stood still and called them and said, What will ye that I shall do unto you? They say unto him, Lord, that our eyes may be opened. So Jesus had compassion on them and touched their eyes. And immediately their eyes received sight, and they followed him. Number 141. Julia Bartlett relates how perceptive Mrs. Eddy was in her ability to read thought. It was customary for a few of Mrs. Eddy's students in those days to remember her at Christmas time with a few gifts that would be useful or enjoyable to her. I had a picture of Jesus, which was said to be copied from the portrait carved on an emerald by order of Tiberius Caesar. The face was such as I had never seen in ideal pictures of him. So I decided to have one painted from it for Mrs. Eddy for Christmas, 1884. But when the time came, it was not finished and was not to be mentioned. The other gifts were arranged in her reception room, and she was asked in to see them. As she looked, she seemed surprised and turned immediately to me and said, "I thought it was a picture." I replied, "I do not see why you should think it was a picture." "Well," she said, "I did." Then I told her there was one, but it was not done. And she said, "I thought so." She said every time she had seen me for some time, there was the most beautiful picture in my thought, and it was a picture of Jesus, and there seemed to be a history connected with it, and that it was so beautiful it almost filled her with awe. From Matthew, "And Jesus knew their thoughts." Number 142. Julia Bartlett recounted the following healing. A man who walked with crutches went to hear Mrs. Eddy preach in Hawthorne Hall. Two people, one on each side, helped him up the steps at the entrance. After the service, he left the hall carrying the crutches under one of his arms. Miss Bartlett saw this man enter and leave. Mind in Nature, June 1885, page 62. Number 143. Irving C. Tomlinson relates, "One day, when I was taking dinner with Mrs. Eddy, the doorbell rang, and on learning that a lady had called to see her, she said she would not keep her waiting, so left the table and went to her. This lady proved to be a physician who had been to see her some time before and had now come to tell her that she had had a chronic trouble of long standing that drugs failed to heal, but that she had been entirely free from it from the day she first met Mrs. Eddy. She wished to give her something in return, so had brought a diamond ring, which had been an heirloom in her family, and which she prized most of anything she had. She had therefore chosen it as best showing her appreciation of what had been done for her. Miss Julia Bartlett was with Mrs. Eddy when this lady called the second time.